There's the injury the Diamondbacks suffered last night. There was Addison Reed coming out of the bullpen, and my Twitter timeline and inbox blew up with, no, no. And you have to relax on that. You know, the Blackhawks winning last night, I would love to see whether it's tonight with Golden State in Cleveland or on Friday night if there is a game seven. The traditional handshake in hockey, there's none better a celebration and none better sportsmanship shown than that. And the way that hockey goes about it gets lost in the shuffle. We immediately want to turn the page and get right into, can LeBron do it by himself tonight? And I'll do that. Al McCoy is going to be with us, the Hall of Fame voice of the Phoenix Suns. I figure it's time to talk to Al about this whole LeBron versus Michael Jordan thing. There are certain people whose opinions I really value and respect that I'll put on this show to give a little bit more context, or just some context, rather than just somebody saying, well, he's better and you're wrong and you're stupid and he sucks and all that stuff. So I'll talk to Al about that. Also, Alvin Gentry and what he's going to inherit down in New Orleans from Al's view. And Al's a Glendale resident. So how's this whole hockey thing in Al's view? This is really a day of veteran broadcasters, which is cool. I have the Hall of Famer Al McCoy. Tim Brando is going to be with us. Tim is one of the best in the business. He is anchoring Fox Sports Go coverage, from Chambers Bay with the U.S. Open starting on Thursday. Guys, if you're watching me in real time here at 10 a.m., the U.S. Open this week, the only way you're going to be able to access it is on Fox Sports Go. I'm just chasing away most of our Thursday audience, which is fine because I'll be watching too. Those days happen. Tim is at Chambers Bay. They say it's a 10-mile walk, start to finish, on this course. It's like 16,000 steps or something. So Tim's there. I want to talk to him about that. And then Michael Della Russa is going to be with us. Talk United, as we do every Tuesday. The struggles continue. If you have your questions for the coach, you can feel free to email them in to me or shoot them over to me on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat, or Brad at sports360az.com. But every week, Coach stands in there, and coming up short, a tough result once again. We'll also talk to him about the Women's World Cup match, which is tonight. I feel very good today. Very, very good today. A lot going on, so let's get you started. What is on my mind in the world of sports? Brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. You can shop online at santanford.com. So General Manager Tim Hovick and I have known one another for over 4 years now. When I decided to make my move and walk away from television, which is like the best thing that ever happened in my world, Tim was one of those guys that said, whatever you do, wherever you go, I'm there with you. You don't know what that means when you're starting up something. And it's been that way in buying vehicles for my family through the years. And this is even before I did my thing from television to this. Now, Tim's been there, and the people at Santan Ford have been there from start to finish, and I really appreciate that. As we go through our journey of life, we need a new vehicle, not to sound overly dramatic about it, but you may be in that spot too where, guys, I got to get out of this truck I'm in or this car I'm in. I've got my summer vacation coming up. I don't know where to go. Santan Ford, that's the place. The Ford brand is terrific. I drive the Ford Fusion, the hybrid edition. It makes perfect sense for me and my busy lifestyle. My wife drives an Explorer, perfect sense for her and her busyness, running our kids around and everything that we do in that space. That's at Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Al McCoy in about 10 minutes. So I want to start with the Diamondbacks because, once again, last night I missed the Goldschmidt home run. I was in and out last night. Was it a moonshot, Eric? I didn't see it. Did you see the Goldschmidt home run last night?
Off speed pitch that he gets up in the air deep to center field. Trout backing up, and that ball is gone. A home run. Paul Goldschmidt takes it out of here, his 18th. And it's 3-0 Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. Out towards left center field, it was quite a shot.
That was nice. I like that. That was good. Tomas hit one out that grazed off the wall. I did see that one. And so they win. They were up 5-0. Robbie Ray, these pitchers that they have here in this stretch, I get it. None of them are Cy Young or probably going to win a Cy Young. They won't, in all likelihood. But look, Chase Anderson, 7 innings and a hit. This kid Webster, 5 2/3. Who's heard of Webster? De La Rosa was really good. Robbie Ray, I like watching Robbie Ray pitch. There's something about Robbie Ray that I like with his effort and his delivery, his enthusiasm, his command. About the only downside last night was in the first inning, very first player gets up at the plate, Inciarte, and he strains his hamstring. I don't know how long he's going to be out. Cliff Pennington comes into the game. Bottom line is they're one game under 500. My Diamondbacks, one game under 500, sitting here on June 16th. 31-32. And tonight they've got the Angels again. And except Hellickson's on the mound tonight. The pressure is on these guys with each start to get better and better and better. But look, let's be honest. If you're going with Hellickson, Anderson, Webster, De La Rosa, and Ray, and that's your rotation, you're not going to go very far. So please consider making a move. I'm pleased with where they are right now, but I want more than that. Goldschmidt, I'm going to get into him a little bit later and what he's doing because the numbers he's putting up are truly astounding. Are they going to do anything at the deadline? I had Derek Hall with me yesterday, the president of the Diamondbacks. Typically, when you put on front office executives, they don't say anything. I mean, they talk and they won't say a thing. And it drives me crazy. There's a reason why I don't put on very many players on this show because they don't say much. There's a reason why I'm pretty selective as to who we put on the show because I don't want people that just kind of give the same old stuff. I asked Derek, do you expect to be active at the trade deadline?
You know, I mean, we're in a very tough division, and the Dodgers are who they are. The Giants are a very good team. I mean, they're the defending champs. The Padres improved greatly over the, over the off season, and here we are still sitting in fourth. I still think we can make a move. We're still gonna make a run at some point. Mm-hmm. We would only make moves at the trade deadline that would help us this year if they also help us in the future. We can't do something where we're going to bring in, you know, a veteran guy or a guy in the last year of his contract just to try and help us this year. And a rental player doesn't make sense for what we're doing.
Okay, and I agree with that to a point. And I appreciate his candor on that. There are plenty of assets. Inciarte going down with a hamstring, that's not good. You hope it's just something that's a day or two, but that didn't look good at all. So suddenly we're the four outfielders. How are you going to play all of them? Now you're down to three outfielders. You have to call someone up from the farm if, in fact, that's what happens. My point in this is, look, you have an MVP guy at first base. You have a potential. You have a guy in the conversation of Rookie of the Year. I don't know if he's going to win it or not, but you have a guy in the conversation until Tomas is Rookie of the Year. And here you are, one game under 500. And everywhere I go, I hear how entertaining and how fun they are to watch. That was not the case the last 3 years where it was just dreadful. Okay, the television ratings on Fox Sports Arizona are really good. So there's a lot to like here, but inject somebody at the top of the rotation, please, because they're getting enough offense. They're getting enough offense. Derek mentioned the Padres. Sometimes I look at sports, actually many times I look at sports and I look at front office people and I say to myself, self, maybe it's because I hosted the Colangelo show for 15 years. Maybe it's because he mentored me for some of those years. Maybe it's because I saw all the smart people that came and went from that organization. But man, I see guys in front office positions and think, I think I could do this. I really do, because it comes down to crazy agents and crazy owners. And you have to know that most agents are nuts and most owners are absolutely crazy. So here are the Padres with a good manager in Bud Black, but their pitching stinks. They make all these moves. They bring in guys whose contracts are going to expire. They bring in Craig Kimbrell for their bullpen. They bring in Justin Upton. They bring in Matt Kemp. Matt Kemp's not hitting much at all. And what do you know? They fire a good baseball man in Bud Black. The interesting part of this to me is you look at the NL West, Colorado's not going anywhere, in my opinion. The Padres' pitching isn't deep enough. They've allowed like 39 home runs at home this year. I think that's the number. That's crazy. In the heavy air of San Diego and Petco Park, it's turned into a launching pad. So that team, in my view, is not going anywhere. The Giants have shown here in the last week they've hit a slide. They slid in April. They came back very strong in May, had a terrific May. The Dodgers aren't running away and hiding, but yeah, they battered the Diamondbacks around. The Diamondbacks are not the worst team in the division. They're not even the second worst team in the division. And I actually think that they're a rising team within the division. They don't have enough pitching to get to that point, but they're certainly in the wild card race. I would consider them a team that should be buyers, not sellers. I think the Padres waved the white flag yesterday. That's crazy. You're sitting here in June and you fire Bud Black just because you haven't seen enough progress? Well, I don't know. He's not out there pitching. And then they laid an egg last night. They got run over by the A's 9-1. Story of the day, this is something that will pick up steam. It won't get as much attention as it should today, but this will pick up steam. The FBI and prosecutors from the U.S. Department of Justice investigating the St. Louis Cardinals for allegedly hacking into the internal networks of the Houston Astros. Now think about that. You've got the FBI and the Department of Justice kicking a baseball team around. The interesting side to this story to me is this happened in 2011. Was La Russa still with the Cardinals in 2011? You have to go look at that. Investigating unnamed members of the Cardinals front office at the time. Law enforcement believes Cardinals employees hacked into the Astros network after Astros general manager Jeff Lunau, who was previously a Cardinals executive, left. So after he left, he goes to Houston. The law enforcement folks believe the Cardinals hacked into the Astros network. Now, what type of punishment can you have from this? Could you say, St. Louis, you're not going to the postseason? I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen on that front. But it's a story that, as the day progresses, really interesting to me. Obviously, last night, the Blackhawks, here's how it sounded in Chicago in the stadium last night. Chicago taking down Tampa Bay. So they go on to the victory there. We'll talk more about that. Cavs Warriors on the other side with Al McCoy. Clippers make a trade, the U.S. Open, and much more. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
In about 15 minutes, we'll go to Seattle. Fox Sports veteran broadcaster Tim Brando, who's anchoring the team coverage on Fox Sports Go from the U.S. Open. He'll join us live from Chambers Bay. That'll come up in about 15 minutes. Now, legendary Suns Hall of Fame voice Al McCoy. Always good to catch up with Al. Many, many things I want to talk to Al about, a laundry list. I appreciate your time, Al. How are you?
I'm doing great, Brad. Good to talk to you, as always.
You as well, Al. Let's start with the finals. Tonight is game number six. Just big picture, what do you make out of the Warriors and series with the Cavaliers to this point?
Well, obviously, you know, it's tough to say anything derogatory against these NBA finals because everything is there. The All-Stars, the LeBron, Curry, the ratings, it's been fantastic. Of course, you know, me, Brad, I always wonder, why do the playoffs have to be a different game than we see during the regular season? Because obviously it's a different game. The officials call it differently, but it does create a lot of excitement. And that's what this playoff series has had, with LeBron doing almost the impossible, keeping Cleveland in the race, and the Warriors being banged around maybe for the first time all year physically. But it's been exciting for the fans, no question about that.
The broadcast crew. Okay, so Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy just are very straightforward of, that's a foul, that's a foul, that's a foul. They'll put Steve Javy on, and at times Steve Javy sounds like he's an apologist, in my humble opinion, for what's going on out on the court. Do you like the straightforwardness of it, or does it just need to be part of the game at this point from the broadcaster's view, Al? What do you think?
You know, that's interesting that you bring that up, Brad, because probably earlier in my broadcast career, I was more critical of officiating, and it's always a controversial situation when broadcasters are critical of referees. My philosophy, as you know, is if the call really affects the game, then I think as a broadcaster that you have to refer to it. But it is interesting because Van Gundy and Jackson criticized the officials more than I think any local broadcaster around the NBA. And I got a kick out of the other night when Van Gundy said, well, one thing they'll have to say, LeBron James didn't get any calls in this playoff series. And that's true. But I go back to my comment I made a moment ago. Why does the game have to be played differently in the playoffs than it is during the 82-game regular season? I think it's a disservice to the referees because I think in many instances they're very confused. Should I call this? No, I shouldn't call this. This guy's all over me verbally. Should I team up? No, I hadn't better do that. I really feel for the officials because I think that it's very a tough job for them in these playoffs.
Well, and I know that in visiting with you that you had had conversation with David Stern and when he was commissioner. I'm just wondering how Adam Silver feels when he's turning on his product or and hearing the guys sitting there courtside just crushing the officials in certain cases.
Right.
And quite honestly, I think that they're right in certain instances, you know?
Well, they are. And as I said, I do have some compassion for the referees because I think they're in a position really of not knowing how they should call these games.
Yeah.
Obviously, they let so much more physical play go. They let the players get in their face and complain, and they let it go. Sometimes they call things, sometimes they don't. As a matter of fact, I would have to agree. I don't think LeBron James has gotten any calls at all. There have been many instances where he's been blatantly fouled, grabbed, and held, and no call is made. So, but it's exciting, and as I said, the ratings certainly indicate the fans love it, and the personalities that everybody wanted to see in the playoffs are there. And tonight, the Game 6 will maybe be the most exciting of them all. We'll have to wait and see.
Suns Hall of Fame man, play-by-play man Al McCoy with us for a couple of minutes. Brad Sesmat, Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. This is not to denigrate what David Griffin has done or anybody with the Cavaliers have done, but just through the injury of Irving and the injury to Love and the surrounding cast, Al, I'm having a hard time remembering seeing somebody like a LeBron James have so very little help around him and to see an offense, other than a few screens on the baseline to try to free up some of their guards, they don't really run any plays. It's just get the ball to LeBron. If it's pick and roll, get him off of Iguodala. Have you ever seen anything quite like it out of a finals team where it's so one-dimensional?
No. And you know, no one mentions Varejao. I mean, another starter. They're actually without three starters.
Yeah,
Varejao went out early in the season. And then the other two that you mentioned, Irving and Love, it's amazing. And really, and I would have to say this, there's been so much conversation about, you know, who's the greatest player of all time. And, you know, I don't know how anybody can even pinpoint an individual in that category. But I certainly think LeBron James is the most versatile player. He plays in all phases of the game. If you have the hot hand, you get the basketball. If you need a rebound, he gets it. If you need defense, he does it. Now, he's shooting the ball a lot now because he has to.
Right.
No one else can score. And it is amazing that, you know, I think Paul Coro of the Republic had it in his column this morning. The other four players on that Cleveland lineup couldn't even start for the Phoenix Suns. It's the LeBron James show, and he's making a competitive finals, no question about it.
When you watched Magic play and you watched Jordan play, and now you've seen LeBron play, what do you see that he's able to do that they weren't? Is there really that much of a difference?
Well, he's the most complete player, I think, Brad. I mean, when you look at Michael Jordan and Magic and Kobe, they were there to score. They wanted their 40 points every night. LeBron just makes everybody better on his team. He's the complete player. As we know, if you need points, he scores. If you have an individual player that has a hot hand, he gets him the basketball. If he needs rebounds, he has it. If he needs to drive it to the hoop, he does it and gets to the line. He's the most complete player. There's just no one single phase to his game, Brad. And I think that's where he has the edge over a Michael Jordan or a Magic or a Kobe. He's not just a scorer. He's a very, very complete player. And, of course, you know, he's a physical specimen, and he can do those things.
It's funny because I think their season turned around here in Phoenix. If you remember, that's when LeBron came. I'm sure you do. It's when LeBron came back. Blatt was under siege. And LeBron took a couple weeks off. And I think that that's where it all started, was here in Phoenix. and to see where they are now. He's the MVP of this series. Whether if they win or lose, and if, even if they lose, in my view, he's still the MVP of this series.
Well, you know, it's interesting because so many people, and it's a tough decision to make, does the MVP have to be on the winning team? And there's a lot to be said about that. Even though LeBron may be the best player on the court, if they don't win it all, should he still be the MVP? As we all know, and it's been pointed out many times, Jerry West is the only player in playoff history that's been the MVP with the losing team when he's with the Lakers. I think that LeBron probably will get the nod, but yeah, there's some controversy involved in it. Should the player be on the winning team that gets the MVP? Obviously, Curry had some poor games, but he certainly showed up in the last game, and we'll see what happens. We'll see when the voting comes around who is going to get that MVP award. But win or lose, I think LeBron has an edge.
One last question on the series, and we're talking with Al McCoy. I don't think if you're Golden State, you want to face LeBron James in a Game 7. They're just, and he gets an extra day of rest, too, which I think is important to point out, that if they win, if Cleveland wins tonight, they don't play again until Friday. And
right.
It's that's what I think adds to this. Is he going to shoot the ball 50 times tonight rather than 39 and 40? Is he going to shoot the ball 60 times? I think it was it the other night, Al, was 70 of the 91 points came through LeBron James. I mean, it's,
that's right.
It's crazy.
And he has to, because there's no one else that can do it. If anybody else has a hot hand, he'll get them the basketball. Make no mistake about that. But he's doing it because he has to. And, you know, it's interesting. This Golden State Warrior team, and of course, they had the fantastic year, and they have great players, and they have depth, and they have everything going for them. But they've never been manhandled defensively like Cleveland has been able to do in the playoffs. If you tried to do that during the regular season, half your team would be fouled out trying to compete against them. But the playoffs are different, as I mentioned, and it definitely has bothered the Warriors. No, they're not a physical team. They're not a big inside team. Now they forced Cleveland to match up with them. I'm going to be very interesting tonight to see if that strategy continues for the Cavaliers or if they will try and go with their bigs and force Golden State to match up with them. It's going to be an interesting game tonight, Brad.
Let's switch over to Alvin Gentry. When he's done at Golden State, he goes to New Orleans. You've seen Anthony Davis. He has been hurt. Is he the next great one in the NBA? There's been a lot of discussion about that. This, I think, is a good fit for Alvin Gentry. What are your thoughts on this?
It's ideal. Davis is the next great player if he's not there already. Alvin Gentry is the ideal coach for that team. New Orleans is going to be a fun ball club. They'll be running and gunning. Anthony Davis will be scoring points like crazy. I think it was a great hire for New Orleans. Of course, I'm a great Alvin Gentry fan. He's an excellent basketball mind. He's a great coach, and he was the ideal coach to fill that position in New Orleans, and they will love him, no question about it.
Before I let you go, you are, in my opinion, not just a legendary Hall of Fame voice of the Phoenix Suns. You're somebody that is I don't like to use the word treasure, but I will. You're a Valley treasure, but you're somebody that looks out for the state of Arizona. You like and love the state. I've just visited with you enough through the years, and you're one of my, in my view, a civic leader of sorts with your view of things. What do you make out of Glendale and the Coyotes as it goes right now?
Well, you know, I really can't comment on that, Brad. And to get into the entire situation would take about three shows. It's a long, long story of what has transpired, and we'll just have to wait and see.
All right. We'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and your insight as always, Al. Thanks.
Hey, thanks. Always great to visit with you, Brad. Keep up the good work, and I know we're going to have fun watching that game tonight.
I'll see you down the road. Thanks, Al. Al McCoy for a couple of minutes, the Hall of Fame voice of the Phoenix Suns. Appreciate his time. On the other side, Tim Brando, Fox Sports broadcaster. That it will be next from Chambers Bay, the U.S. Open. We'll get a preview from Tim. Michael Della Russa joins us in about 30 minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. So along with the Diamondbacks on a roll, and of course the NBA Finals tonight, fans across the great state of Arizona are all caught up in the U.S. Open. Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmad with you. Spotlight for a couple of minutes. Let's go up to Chambers Bay, Washington. The U.S. Open gets started on Thursday, and a tremendous amount of buzz around this tournament. I think the ratings on television and online are going to be enormous, especially on the East Coast with the late start and some of the pairings. Veteran announcer Tim Brando, who's been with us in the past, is going to anchor the coverage for Fox Sports Go. On the TV side, it will be Joe Buck, but I think many of you are going to be watching Tim because in the middle of Thursday, Mickelson, Watson, and Cabrera tee off at 7:30 in the morning. In the middle of the day, Fowler, Woods, and Ustasin at 2:30. Tim, I appreciate you joining us. I know it's a busy time for you up there. This has got to be an exciting time for you, anchoring this coverage on Fox Sports Go.
Brad, thanks. Yes, it is. I'm just thrilled to be a part of the team photo, so to speak. I love golf. I'm a nine cap. I play out of my home, which is on a golf course. And when I was at CBS, I was fortunate to get to do a little bit of golf for them in the 18th tower and a few events when Jim and Bill McAtee needed some time off. And I work Masters.com, so I've got a little bit of the digital background, but I don't think any of that that I have in my past could rival what the U.S. Open is in terms of the total number of platforms, and the usage of the platforms will be different, I think, this time. In the past, the online coverage was something that I think Masters.com wanted to have because, as you know, they have limited access to actual shots.
Right.
On their broadcast carriers, whether it was ESPN on Thursday, Friday, or CBS on Saturday, Sunday. So Billy Payne, I think, wanted to address that because there was a need, and I think he did a really wonderful job of it. But you really didn't see those platforms trying to drive viewership to all of the platforms quite the way this will happen this week with Fox's coverage in conjunction with the USGA. The first 2 hours on Thursday morning, of that grouping that includes Bubba Watson, Phil Mickelson, and Angel Cabrera, all Masters champions together at 7:33 Pacific time. The first 2 hours will be available only on the USGA.org, which is USOpen.com. And then a couple of hours in, Fox Sports Go will pick up with that and carry it through the rest of the day. And that's really going to be, at that point in time, those first 2 hours, the only way to see golf shots.
Right.
And so, yeah, if you're a golfaholic, and I am, I know I remember telling our bosses when I was asked if I wanted to be involved, I said, listen, if I weren't involved, I would be at home sitting in front of my computer dialing up whoever you put in there. So I'm really happy to be here and actually have the opportunity to call golf shots because that group is going to command a lot of attention all day long and a lot of the golfing public wants to see all their shots. I think this is a made-to-order golf course for long ball hitters and particularly left-handed long ball hitters. Mickelson going after the career slam. And you might say, and I really believe this, this is maybe the lone setup that Bubba Watson could see for a U.S. Open where he really has a chance to win. And I think that's going to be, I think, insightful and enjoyable for a lot of the golfers out there that love watching him shape the ball around the golf course. So I'm thrilled about it.
Tim Brando, Fox Sports Go, Chambers Bay, U.S. Open with Brad Sussmad. Is it true it's a 10-mile walk?
Yeah. Oh, no. Trust me, I walked the front nine yesterday, and not only is it a long walk, but it's a hike in terms of uphill, downhill. I mean, the slope rating here is through the roof. This is a course that was built only 8 years old, but on a sand quarry. And the thing that I think everyone will notice when they see it for the first time is, oh my gosh, we've never seen a setup like this for a U.S. Open. And where did they find this golf course? It looks like an old course, one of the old courses across the pond. It's got a Lynx feel to it.
Yeah.
But it's not really Lynx golf in the sense that the shots will hold a little bit more. It's pretty dry here, so they're getting a lot more roll off the fairways. And as long as the fairways remain dry, I think they're syringing them a couple of times a day right now because they're beginning to show some some stress, although I think the USDA wants that. I think this is exactly what the USDA was hoping for coming in. But I think it's going to make for the course to not play its full 7,700 yards, which I think enables, as I said, the long ball hitters to have a real advantage. But that isn't to say that guys that are precise iron players won't have a good chance, because they will. I think it's a fair setup, but I think it's one that allows, you know, the bombers a better chance. But I was walking with Bubba yesterday, with Bubba Watson and Ricky Fowler. You know, Jimmy Walker's probably striking the ball as well or better than anybody on tour right now. And a amateur from Florida State, McGuire, kid could really hit the ball a long way. And we were walking with him for about six holes. And Ricky turned around and told me, he said, I hope you've got plenty to say tomorrow, because this is a hike. just going from one green to another tee box is going to take, you know, 10 minutes in some cases, because they have to walk so far to get from one hole to the other.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's long. Put it this way. My Fitbit that I have on my left wrist showed 16,000 steps, and that was with 1.9 yesterday.
Well, I'll take that. I'll take that. Got to get those 10,000 in a day. That's what keeps us going.
No treadmill was needed last night.
That's right. Tim Brando with us. 290-acre public golf course on the Puget Sound. Tim will be anchoring the coverage on Fox Sports Go. A couple other questions, because I know your time is short. The ninth hole, there's been a lot of buzz about the ninth hole. I don't want to go hole by hole, but what makes the ninth hole so distinct?
There's a drop-off. There are two different teeing locations. That's another thing the USGA will, based on the environment, based on the winds, which tend to be southwesterly this time of year, off the Puget Sound, they will determine whether they're going to go to the back tees or move those tees up a little bit based on really the environment. I think we'll see 2 days where the tee will not be as elevated. The back tees are elevated with a drop off of well over 200 feet.
Wow.
Which makes it incredible. The flight of the ball, I think, I don't know, but I would suggest that maybe our producer on the broadcast side, Mark Loomis, might have a shot. He might have a hang time clock, like we'd have in a punt when the ball is, you know, when the ball is hit, because it's going to stay up in the air because you're going against the wind, but it is incredibly downhill, and there are bunkers surrounding that hole that can make it very difficult. There are a couple of holes out there that I think have caught the ire of some of the players already. But trust me when I tell you, I think that it's going to be fair. In many respects, some of these guys will have a chance to shoot maybe a 64 or 65 if they're striking the ball as well as they want. And that's almost unheard of on a U.S. Open layout. I think that the course is gettable. If a guy is really, really striking it well, he can be rewarded in a way, because the rough is not up. This is all fescue. It's one style of grass. There might be a little poana that grows up in a couple of spots, but you really, the biggest curiosity for me, Brad, in looking at the course yesterday was tracking where a green really begins and a fairway ends. Mm. They've actually put white dots around the greens to designate what a green in regulation would be statistically, because you're really, from a visual standpoint, not sure. These are some of the largest greens also that you'll find. These are the largest fairways and the largest greens that I've seen on a U.S. Open setup in my lifetime.
Before I let you go, do you have a number? When you talked about the players the last few days, where do you think the winning number is going to be?
I'm not saying everybody every day has a chance at 64. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But I'm saying one great golf day could really be rewarded. Remember, this is a par 70 setup. They've converted two par fives the par fours, the USGA, for this event. So I think six under is gettable. You know, when I say 64, that would mean a 66 on a par 72 layout. So I think, again, we'll be close to par, but I think under par wins. I don't think a level par, to me, level par would not be the optimum finishing point for the winner. I think maybe three or four under might be the number this year.
I appreciate your time on short notice, Tim. Thanks. Good luck this week.
Thank you, Brad. Happy to do it. And look forward to football season, too.
Yeah, you got it. There's Tim Brando for a couple of minutes. Good to visit with him. Veteran broadcaster, Fox Sports Go, anchoring the coverage. It's where it's all going, guys. It's all digital. So you can watch Mickelson and Watson and Cabrera You have to watch it online. There's going to be people screaming about that. And then Fowler, Woods, and New Statesman at 2:30 on a Thursday as well. We're going to be completely distracted doing Thursday's show. That's just the way it is. By the way, Friday, I'm not going to be here Friday, but Goody is going to do the show. Speaking of distracted, Bill Goodykoontz is going to get the studio to himself. I'm not going to be here. Eric's not going to be here. Jared Nielsen's going to be the one that screws up the show or keeps it going. I think we're going to let Jordan in on it. But in all seriousness, Bill has booked Jimmy Kimmel for the show on Friday. He's very excited about it. He keeps sending me texts. He's so excited. If Kimmel backs out on him or doesn't call in, oh my gosh, I don't know what Bill's going to do. He's going to sit in the corner and suck on his thumb. He's going to not have any idea what to do. So it'll be fun. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I was talking with Al and Tim Brando. Pat Murphy gets the Padre job. How about that, Eric? Pat Murphy. I like Pat a lot. I had no problems. Well, I shouldn't say no problems. Pat and I liked to spar. It was fine. And I liked what he was about at ASU. Some of you ASU people don't like or didn't like Pat Murphy. I had no problems with him. But Pat Murphy, the new manager of the Padres, on an interim basis, how about that? Big story there. And then the Diamondbacks have put Insei Arte on the DL with a strained right hamstring. So they recalled Danny Dorn. They have a game tonight with Hellickson on the mound. And whenever Hellickson is on the mound, I get just cold feet. Sometimes he's pretty good. He's the second slowest worker in the major leagues.
They just got to keep the mojo going, though, with their starters. They've had like four or five really good starters.
One game below 500. With this starting rotation that they rolled out there.
We'll take it.
Anderson, Webster, De La Rosa, Ray, Hellickson. One game below 500 in a division where they're not out of the race. That's what's crazy to me. I mean, it's really remarkable. They're getting enough offense. When people said, well, Trumbo is going to leave, and yeah, it's taken a while for Insei Arte behind him in the lineup. I mean, behind Goldschmidt, I should say. But... you know, the numbers for Goldschmidt, they don't lie. He had three more hits last night. He had three more runs batted in last night. Goldschmidt is on pace for 213 hits. He's first in walks. He's on pace to lead the league in walks. 131 walks he's on pace for. 126 runs scored. He's on pace for 136 runs batted in. He's on pace for 88 extra base hits and 26 stolen bases. That's the thing about it. He cleared 10 stolen bases last night.
The best thing the Diamondbacks did it was lock him up before he really truly hit his stardom.
No, I mean he hasn't really hit his stride yet. If you think about it,
He's just coming into his prime. But what I'm saying, you know, 3 years ago when we had no idea he was going to be as great of a player as he is, and he is a great player. They locked him up long term. Smart.
Well, it's like last night I'm watching the Angels roll Trout and Pujols back-to-back. And I'm thinking, okay, the Diamondbacks' vision of Goldschmidt and Trumbo, clearly when La Russa and company and Dave Stewart took this team over, in the backs of their minds, it's, we hope Trumbo gets off to a good start so we can just get him out of here. That's how it viewed to me is from the get-go in spring training. And if you don't think that there are those conversations, then you're fooling yourselves. So right now, Tomas is hitting the cover off the ball. And yeah, he's gone through some spaces where he's scuffled at the plate. But I still think having Goldschmidt, Tomas, that's pretty darn good. If you can get a little more offense out of Jake Lamb when he gets his bat back, if you get a little bit more offense out of second base, a little bit more consistency out of shortstop, figure out your catching situation offensively. I don't know, do you need to address any of those, or is it just a matter of, guys, you're in this. Go get some frontline pitching. You are in this. Or is it just me just seeing things differently than everybody else? I want to get over to this deal on an NBA thing that happened last night. I know that tonight with the Cavs and Warriors, and it was great talking with Al about Cleveland, we didn't really touch on Golden State that much because – in my view, if Golden State doesn't wrap this up tonight, the thought that, well, they're going to go back home for a game 7, you're going against LeBron James, who's going to have an extra day of rest, and he is the self-proclaimed best player on the planet. We used that bite yesterday. He said it, best player on the planet. Now, did he say that as a way to motivate his teammates? Did he say that in a way to say to his teammates, look, you guys may be tired, but I'm the best one here. So suck it up. Let's get after it a little bit more, and I can lead you to a title. If they win tonight's game at Cleveland, there's this thought that, well, Golden State's going to go back home and take it. I wouldn't be so sure about that. And the story that nobody, I have not seen anybody really talk about this. Klay Thompson has not had a good series. Is he suffering from concussion, post-concussion, the blood coming out of the ear and all that stuff? He has not had a consistent series at all. Now, Golden State's able to win when you get play like Leandro Barbosa and Andre Iguodala to go along with Steph Curry. They're able to win games, but, you know, if tonight Klay Thompson struggles again, how much further do you go if you're Steve Kerr with him out on the floor? I mean, you have to have him. I'm not saying you bench him, but defensively against LeBron James, he has been a liability. Iguodala's played him much better. If it's high pick and roll with LeBron, get him off Iguodala, get LeBron in the low post, back him in, turn around, layup. That's pretty much the offense. So really interesting tonight. The other NBA story is there's this trade that went down with the Clippers. I didn't know you could make deals while the playoffs were going on. Usually they say stay away from doing that. But the Clippers yesterday, and I bring this up because it involves the Suns once again. Look, let's just stack the teams in the Western Conference. And you go from Golden State to San Antonio to Houston. You go over to Golden State and you go to Portland and you go to the Clippers. So right there, I'm at six. The top eight are the ones that make the postseason. Oklahoma City last year, besieged with injury. Kevin Durant comes back. You got to feel they're better. New coach, Billy Donovan. Okay, that's seven. The Lakers are in a position where they can add an awful lot here in the offseason. They're going to have the number two overall pick. They can go do quite a few things. Okay, that's eight. Is Sacramento going to be better? I think they are. Is Portland going to regress some if they lose LaMarcus Aldridge? I think they are. But the Clippers, I don't know if they got better or not. They traded for Lance Stephenson yesterday. Lance Stephenson, of players who played 100 minutes or more, was the worst three-point shooter in the NBA at 17%. 17%. On top of that, he conned Michael Jordan into paying him $21 million over the last 3 years. That's pretty good. I'll take that job. Let me sign up. I can't shoot, but I can get a lot of money. The Clippers trade away Matt Barnes, who is probably one of the dirtiest players in the NBA, in my opinion, and a head case. He was here. They trade away Spencer Hawes, who, oh, by the way, the Clippers just signed last summer to a big contract, and he never saw the light of day. So how's that trade working out for you? But the Clippers go get Lance Stephenson, and you have Chris Paul and you have Blake Griffin. Are they better? I didn't even throw New Orleans into that mix in the West. I didn't throw Dallas in that mix in the West. So let me throw those two teams in the mix with Anthony Davis and, of course, the Mavericks being the Mavericks. All of a sudden now I'm talking about the Suns like, I don't know, 10, 11, 12. So, guys, next week is the draft, and free agency is the week after. Please do something. That's all. Not being critical. It's, are you really just going to roll this same team out again next year? In the next 2 weeks, the Coyotes, wherever they're going to play, and the Suns are going to enter their free agent phase, and they're going to enter their draft phase. So there's going to be a lot of movement. The Diamondbacks are suddenly really interesting. They're fun to watch, and they're relevant again. And, you know, we get to football season. The start of college season is like 80 days away. The NFL gets started after that, after Labor Day. And usually our sports cycle just gets swallowed up because all the teams haven't been very good. Well, I think we have a chance here with the baseball team to be really interesting if they just make some moves on the pitching front. And when you see where the Suns and the Coyotes are, that they're going to have a chance to do some things, to shake it up, to make some moves, to have some interest, to create some buzz. And I don't mean artificial buzz. Don't go out and just roll out your 13th draft pick and say, here you go, here's our offseason. Do something. do something of relevance. I think the Suns already have had a start to a very good offseason by Lon Babby no longer being involved. That was a very good first step, and I'm serious about that. You know, the track record doesn't lie. 5 years don't lie. So please get a new voice in there, or the voices that have been developed, let them do their thing. Now go address this roster. Michael Della Russo joins us on the other side. We'll talk AZ United SC as we do every week. United at home this coming weekend, actually the next few weeks. We'll talk with the coach and much, much more as we continue on here on a Tuesday.
Now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Hour number two, the Diamondbacks tonight at home, on the road, rather, at Anaheim against the Angels. They just put Inciarte on the DL, so that is a downside to them. Goldschmidt hit his 18th last night. Diamondbacks win. They've won four in a row, and they continue to get very good starting pitching. Tonight, Game 6, Cavs-Warriors in Cleveland. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. U.S. Open starts this week at Chambers Bay, Washington. They said it takes 10 miles to walk around the course. 290-acre public course. That is crazy. And tonight, the Women's World Cup, which we will be watching. USA and Nigeria win tonight. They move on to the round of 16. Pat Murphy, the former Sun Devil baseball coach, named today the skipper of the San Diego Padres. Some of what's going on in the Valley Sports and what is on my mind. Turn our attention, as we do every Tuesday, Arizona United SC. United taking on the Sounders FC2 this Saturday at home, 7:30, home match. They're actually home for three of the next 4 weeks. And they will be taking on Sounders FC2 at 7:30. That's on Saturday night. Head coach Michael Della Russo joins us for a couple of minutes. How are you, coach?
Good, Brad. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Tough one on Saturday night against Sacramento, a match where Carl Wyszynski was really good, and you jump out to a nice header, and then from there, Sacramento just found their way back in. What did you make out of the match on Saturday night, Michael?
It was night and day, different as far as effort goes compared to the previous weeks. But at the end of the day, we still didn't manage a lead well enough. Our fitness struggle seemed to hit us. And whether it was mental fitness or physical fitness or a combination of the two. And we let a good team capitalize on opportunities that were presented for them. And, you know, Carl made some very good plays, made enough plays for us to win the game. And we didn't make enough plays for him to help him get a win.
Up top, you went with Dershang, Chin, and Tan to start the match. I had a lot of fans that sent me questions about that. What were your thoughts there?
You know, there are three guys that press well, that work well together. You know, we trained a lot on the week of keeping them high to give long support, as well as be able to use their ability where it's, you know, most needed, which is higher up the field. And I think, you know, Dennis and Robbie did pretty well. Obviously, first game back for both of them. You know, as far as significant minutes go, Robbie played, you know, obviously against Vancouver, but, you know, in this heat. But I thought for the most part, the three of them did well. They pressed well. They put themselves in pretty good spots. I think we still have to be better once we win the ball, the three of them, and connecting passes. And, you know, it's putting a complete effort together. And that's what we're going for.
And you also were able to bring in, with the conditions being what they were, this was the first really brutally hot game. And so having Stisser and Top to bring in later in the match, your thought on that?
Yeah, I think we need a little bit more energy from guys off the bench. They know that. You know, I think when you come in, you have to raise the level, not just keep it the same. And I don't think we did that overall. Mm. You know, I think Top did a decent job. He worked hard. We obviously actually had to sub him because bring him in at halftime because Danny was struggling fitness-wise. It's obviously his first go-round back and first time playing in this heat. So 45 is all we could get out of him. And I think Stis had a little bit of an off night. I think he knows that, you know, and we look forward to, you know, him building out that role, if that's going to be the role for him to take in the next few games, and just coming in and making an impact right away.
How do you, I'm getting questions about Carl's confidence, because he can do only so much, and when there are goals scored against him, he's very vocal about it. Is there a balance there with him, Michael? Do you like the fiery side of Carl? Do you appreciate where he is right now?
Yeah, he should be. He should hold that standard. I think collectively as an organization, we have to start holding ourselves to a higher standard, and that's what we've gone over. And, you know, his confidence has not been affected. He's a great guy. He understands it. You know, I don't think it's guys not working in front of him. It's just putting us in bad spots sometimes. And, you know, he came up big. He made saves that he needed to make.
Yes, he did.
I think even on their second goal, I think he'll admittedly say that he probably should have stopped that. You know, but he had 2-3 good saves on the day. And you look at the other side of the ball, so did their keeper. And that's what's necessary against two good attacking teams. And, you know, it just came down to one more play that they made that we didn't.
Michael De La Russa with us Saturday night, Sounders FC 2 at Scottsdale Stadium, 7:30. Get your tickets. It's a good opportunity to check out the hometown team as they, here in year number two, continue to grow. Head coach Michael De La Russa joins us every Tuesday. Women's World Cup, let's switch gears for a minute. I know you're focused on your team, but have you had time to watch the USA squad to this point?
I have. I don't think they've played up to their potential yet. But we'll see. Today would be an interesting one to see how they, not so much bounce back, but, you know, work off the momentum of the second half of the last game.
It seems like they're relying on Krieger an awful lot, on their outside backers, Klingenberg and Krieger, to really get something going. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. They have two midfielders that keep their balance well inside, but they don't go through their midfield a bunch. They don't connect through as much as U.S. teams have in the past. So they're relying a lot on getting the ball wide, serving the ball in, and, you know, using athleticism up top. So it's going to be interesting. I want to see what kind of combination they go for up top today and moving forward, because obviously they have, you know, four pretty good forwards, and it's about finding the right two that are going to work well together.
How about Wambach in her role?
Yeah, I mean, she's a handful, obviously.
Not starting, I guess.
Changes the game a little bit. I don't know. I don't know if she's going to, if she starts, but in her role coming in off the bench, I think she should be an impact right away when she comes in. I don't know. It's an interesting one, because I've heard all these things that she's come out and said.
Yeah, about the field conditions.
I'm sure a lot of people follow that as well, and I don't think people have been happy with it. But just from strictly a soccer standpoint, she's a handful, and they have to use her as much as they can. Get her in the box. Keep her up high, I think, and that's where she does most of her damage.
Have you seen enough of the World Cup in between your team and your matches, but have you watched enough to see – does the USA, in your view, have enough to get through in this World Cup, or is this a team that really has got to stretch themselves from where they are now to get to a further spot in the tournament?
I think, you know, I think they have the talent to do so. Like I said before, I don't think they've played their best game, but I don't think a lot of teams have. Mm. It's probably the closest Women's World Cup as far as talent across the board goes, whether it's teams playing better than expected and some teams not playing as well as expected. But I think teams like Brazil, Japan, Germany, obviously, are teams that should start to pull away. But we'll see. I mean, you see Colombia the other day getting a heck of a result against France.
I think
there's becoming more parity in the women's game, which is good, and it makes it exciting for people to watch.
Let's go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Take care, bro.
Stay well. There's Michael De La Russa with us every week. Sounders FC 2 this Saturday night, 7:30 in Scottsdale. Invite you fans, if you've not checked out United, they continue to grow and the fans are great. It's a good product to watch as soccer continues its footprint and growing here in the Valley. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic.